Hello and welcome to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Robert Johnson, a York Rite Mason and Knight Templar. This week I wanted to touch base on the Grand Lodge situation. Still no word from my Grand Lodge, so Grand Lodge Spotlight segment will be on hiatus still. Hopefully an update next week. Also, I wanted to talk about something I attended this last week called a Table Lodge. If you don't know what that is, it's basically a lodge held over a meal, and papers are read with personal replies or other like activities that happen over the course of the evening. It is a bit less formal, ritual-wise, than the regular lodge meetings, and there are usually toasts to different Masonic topics. We toasted to things like the 47th problem of Euclid and others. It was great. It was, in fact, my first table lodge, and I encourage all of you to either go to one or perhaps even organize one of your own at your own lodge. And just quick reference, when I say we toasted the things, we actually used sparkling cider because, as we all know, alcohol is not allowed in a Masonic lodge. The first piece for this week is a question many of us have asked. What is the oldest lodge in the world? Well, here is a piece I lifted from the Masonic Lodge of Education's website. Many Freemasons are curious as to what is the oldest Masonic lodge in the world. So was I. I have always heard that Mother Kilwinning was the oldest. But alas, history may have proved me wrong. I hope you find this information as fascinating as I did. Credit is given for the information below to past Grand Master of Missouri Brother Ray V. Denslow, 1885 to 1960, author of The Masonic World of Ray V. Denslow, Missouri Lodge of Research, publisher, 1964. Brother Denslow also founded the Royal Arch Mason magazine in 1942 and was instrumental in founding the Missouri Lodge of Research, the oldest Masonic lodge in the world. The oldest Masonic lodge in the world with verifiable lodge minutes is the Lodge of Edinburgh No. 1, Edinburgh, Scotland, sometimes known as Mary's Chapel. In July of 1949, it observed its 350th anniversary of its establishment. In 2008, at a time of this writing, Lodge of the Edinburgh No. 1 is 409 years old. The oldest Masonic Lodge minutes are from July 31st, 1599. Lodge of Edinburgh No. 1 has records to prove its long-time existence as the oldest Masonic Lodge. Most impressively, its first five pages of minutes incorporate a Skaw Statutes, which are dated December 28th, 1598. 6 months later, on July 31st, 1599, are to be found the minutes which confirm the lodge's claim as having the oldest existing Masonic minutes. It must be noted, however, that from these minutes there exists no conclusive evidence that the lodge was actually constituted on this date, nor that it is, in actuality, the oldest lodge. Skaw Statutes, the Skaw Statutes, part of the Old Charges, are named for William Skaw, who was master of work to His Majesty and General Warden of the Masonic Craft. In these statutes, he declares that these ordinances issued by him for the regulation of lodges considered the Lodge at Edinburgh to be for all time, the first and principal lodge of Scotland. Lodge of Edinburgh No. 1 was first called the Lodge of Edinburgh, and retained this name until 1688, when the Grand Lodge of Scotland conferred its charter, designated it as the Lodge of Edinburgh, Mary's Chapel No. 1. Prominent members belonging to the Lodge of Edinburgh in its very early days were His Royal Highness the Prince of Wales, afterward called King Edward the Seventh, His Royal Highness King Edward the Eighth. Both were affiliated with the lodge, taking the obligation on the Breeches Bible, which was printed in 1587. The pen with which these two brothers signed the roll is still preserved in the Edinburgh Lodge No. 1 Museum. The oldest Masonic lodge, first operative to speculative in Scotland, 1600. As early as 1600, the Lodge of Edinburgh began to admit non-operative Freemasons. In June of 1600, the Laird of Auchinleck was made a speculative member, the first authentic record of the making of such a member. The famous Dr. de Sauglière visited the Lodge of Edinburgh on August 24, 1721. He had served as Grand Master of England and was referred to as General Master de Sauglière. On the next day, while he was present, the Lord Provost of Edinburgh, the Treasurer, the Deacon Convener of the Trades, and the Clerk to the Dean of the Guild Court were admitted as members. This date is thought to mark the change over from operative to speculative Freemasonry in Scotland. Inception of a Grand Lodge of Scotland in 1736. When the Grand Lodge of Scotland was established on November 30th, 1736, Lodge of Edinburgh took an active part. 33 lodges were represented at the meeting, which was held in the Lodge Room of Edinburgh Lodge, of Edinburgh Lodge. Because the oldest minute of the lodge was that of Edinburgh Lodge, it was placed first on the roll of the Grand Lodge. Lodge Kilwinning, 1642. Lodge of Kilwinning was the second oldest Masonic lodge because of its records dating to December 20th, 1642. It is believed that there may be older lodges, but empirical proof has not been found. Considerable friction develops in 1807, when the Grand Lodge of Scotland permitted Kilwinning to prefix the word Mother to its name. The following are some thoughts from the author, who goes by the name of Simon. Should you wish to visit the oldest Masonic lodge in the world, I would be remiss not to mention that Edinburgh, Scotland, is also home of the Edinburgh Castle, standing 300 to 400 feet above the city. Lit up, even after dark, looking up, you will see a virtual fairyland of turrets, battlements, and castle buildings. Edinburgh Castle, pronounced Edinburgh, dates back to 617 AD, nearly 1400 years ago, when Edwin, King of Northumbria, established a castle on the rock. The town growing up around it became Edwin's Burgh, simplified into Edinburgh. Its banquet hall, once used as a room for parliament, is about 84 feet by 33 feet and has an open timber roof, 45 feet high. It was here, in 1633, Charles I, and in 1648, Oliver Cromwell, were entered with opulence and great magnificence. Decorations on the roof timbers bear the emblazonments of the arms of the principal governors and constables of the castle from 1007 to 1805. On its walls are weapons of war, defensive armor in various periods, and flags of old Scottish regiments. Edinburgh Castle Dungeons. Beneath it is a double tier of dungeons, with small iron-barred loopholes used for prisoners from the middle of the 18th century, 1700s, to Waterloo. Edinburgh Castle Dog Cemetery for soldier dogs. Then as now, loyalty is a highly regarded virtue by the kings of Scotland. Edinburgh Castle is home to an immaculately kept dog cemetery for the soldier dogs of its kings. King George VI, Grand Master of Scotland, at a quarterly communication of the Grand Lodge held November 5, 1936, they elected unanimously brother, His Royal Highness the Duke of York, later to become King George VI, as the Grand Master of Scotland. King George VI, it was also in Edinburgh's castle banquet hall that the ceremony of the installation of the Duke of York, who later became King George VI, and who was the current Queen Elizabeth's father, was carried out on St. Andrew Day, November 30th, 1936, the bicentenary of the Grand Lodge of Scotland in 1736. Past Grand Master Ray V. Denslow, the author of the book, attended this monumentous ceremony at Edinburgh Castle. After all this, therefore, Edinburgh Lodge No. 1 claims the rank of having, first, the oldest Masonic minutes, and second, the Lodge of Record, where the first operative to speculative masonry began, and therefore, due to these documents and minutes, claims its title as the oldest Masonic lodge in the world. Now, for more of that article, you can certainly visit the website, which is www.masonic-lodge-of-education.com, or you can download the entire article via PDF from the Whence Came You mobile app. Next is a short piece on what to do when a Freemason's body is cremated. What do you do with the apron? And this piece is from masonsmart.com. On a post dated July 30th, 2011, Taking It With Me by Tim. How is the Masonic apron disposed of in case of cremation? Is it cremated with the remains, or does it have another role in the memorial service? Thank you. Thank you for your question and for visiting masonsmart.com. In my experience, there is no hard and fast rules as to the disposition of the Masonic apron in the case of cremation. In making his preparations, a brother should decide what he wants done with his apron when the time comes. If he has made no such preparations, then it would be left to the family to decide, with the assistance of a brother. In our Grand Lodge jurisdiction, that of Missouri, the apron is used during the Masonic funeral service, but it is not necessarily that it be the deceased brother's apron. A Masonic apron is displayed, and its importance and meaning are explained. A portion of that explanation states, "And in the grave it shall bear witness to his virtues and to our confidence in the sincerity of his profession." Personally, if I decide on cremation, I will want my apron to be cremated with me. I feel that in my life, my Masonic apron has become inseparable from who I am, and so it should be in death as well. Fraternally, Tim. On an update by an anonymous user, they wrote, "Greetings. It depends on the burial code for the jurisdiction. During the old days, when Masons wore plain white aprons, they were entered with the remains. However, now that aprons cost upwards of $400, the Prince Hall Grand Lodge of Alabama code reads, etc. And now, in the honor of remembrance of he whose tenants of clay lie before us, I shall deposit his emblem with the deceased brother's next of kin. So again, for that question and other questions alike, you can visit www.masonsmart.com. That's MASONSMART.com. This week's famous Freemason is Hiram Bingham III. Hiram Bingham III was an academic explorer, treasure hunter, and politician from the United States. He was made public the existence of Quechua Citadel of Machu Picchu in 1911 with the guidance of local indigenous farmers. Later, Bingham served as a member of the United States Senate. Bingham was born in Honolulu, Hawaii, to Hiram Bingham II, 1831 to 1908, an early Protestant missionary to the Kingdom of Hawaii, the grandson of Hiram Bingham I, 1789 to 1869, another missionary. He attended Oahu College, now known as Punahou School, in Hawaii from 1882 to 1892. He went to the United States in his teens in order to complete his education, entering Phillips Academy in Andover, Massachusetts, from which he graduated in 1894. He obtained a bachelor's degree from Yale University in 1898, a degree from the University of California, Berkeley in 1900, and a PhD degree from Harvard University in 1905. While at Yale, Bingham was a member of the Acacia Fraternity. He taught history and politics at Harvard and then served as preceptor under Woodrow Wilson at Princeton University. In 1907, Yale University appointed Bingham III as a lecturer in South American history. Bingham was not a trained archaeologist, yet it was during Bingham's time as a lecturer, later professor, at Yale that he discovered the largely forgotten Inca city of Machu Picchu. In 1908, he had served as delegate to the first Pan-American Scientific Congress at Santiago, Chile. On his way home via Peru, a local prefect convinced him to visit the pre-Columbian city of Choqquequirau. Bingham published an account of this trip in Across South America, an account of a journey from Buenos Aires to Lima by way of Potosi, with notes on Brazil, Argentina, Bolivia, Chile, and Peru, 1911. Bingham was thrilled by the prospect of unexplored Inca cities and in 1911 returned to the Andes with the Yale-Peruvian expedition of 1911. On July 24, 1911, Melchor Arteaga led Bingham to Machu Picchu, which had been largely forgotten by everybody except the small number of people living in the immediate valley, possibly including two local missionaries named Thomas Paine and Stuart McName, whose descendants claimed that they had already climbed to the ruins in 1906. Also, the Cusco explorers of Enrique Palma, Gabino Sanchez, and Agustin Lizarraga are said to have arrived at the site in 1901. Bingham returned to Peru in 1912 and 1915 with the support of Yale and the National Geographic Society. Machu Picchu has become one of the major tourist attractions in South America, and Bingham is recognized as the man who brought the site to the world attention, although many others helped to bring this site into the public eye. The switchback-filled road that carries tourist buses to the site from the Urubamba River is called the Hiram Bingham Highway. Bingham has been cited as one possible basis for the Indiana Jones character. His book Lost City of the Incas became a bestseller upon its publication in 1948. Peru has long sought the return of the estimated 40,000 artifacts, including mummies, ceramics, and bones that Bingham had excavated and exported from Machu Picchu. On September 14, 2007, an agreement was made between Yale University and the Peruvian government for the return of the objects. On April 12, 2008, the Peruvian government stated that it had revised previous estimates of 4,000 pieces up to 40,000. On June 6, 1956, Bingham passed away at his Washington, D.C. home. He was interred at Arlington National Cemetery in Virginia. He was a member of Hiram Lodge No. 1 in Connecticut. That's it for this week. Remember to find us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at Whence Came You, and add us to your circle, and email us at wcypodcast@gmail.com. Visit our website at wcypodcast.blogspot.com for everything related to the show, including apps for the show, videos, links to Masonic-owned businesses, and more. Take care, and until next week, for Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.